Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing, and I'm now joined by Anuradha Mittal, who is the Executive Director of the Oakland Institute. She established the Oakland Institute after working as co-director of Food First Initiative of Food and Development Policy. Her books include America Needs Human Rights and The Future of the Balance, Essays on Globalization and Resistance. The Oakland Institute recently released a new report detailing how hedge funds are grabbing up African land and working to destabilize global food supplies. Welcome to Background Briefing, Anuradha Mittal.
Thank you.
And nice to be here. Thank you so much for joining us. And my understanding is that it's not just American and British hedge funds that are involved here. Also, the Chinese are making substantial investments in agricultural land in Africa. So is this my first sense of this is this may have something to do with global warming and the idea that the best agricultural land is in Africa, and this is how you're going to corner the market on future food supplies?
Well, a couple of things. You're right on. I think since 2008, when the world witnessed skyrocketing food prices, which was a combination of many things, including climate change, but also policies which are creating these opportunities for speculators to speculate in commodities, we have seen a rush towards land in poor developing countries, with most of it being in Africa. And there are three kind of investors that are moving in. The first two, actually, we have heard lots about. The first ones are rich but food insecure nations, you know, your Middle Eastern states, your Gulf states, that are going into countries such as Africa to be able to secure the food supply because they have the money, but they do not have the land, the resources. Second investors is countries such as India, whose corporations are going into places such as Ethiopia or China, who are not food insecure, but they might get food insecure. At the same time, they're looking at export opportunities. But the third trend that has not been talked about much by the media, and that's what we also focus on in this series of investigative reports that we released this past week, are that these private hedge funds, equity funds, who have nothing to do with agriculture, but see an opportunity after the collapse of the housing market and with the disappearance of the dot-com bubble, they've been looking for the next soft commodity to invest in, and they've found it, and that is agriculture. So lured by very cheap prices of land, lured by all kind of strategic investor statuses such as not having to pay taxes, not having to pay profit taxes, the ability to export all your dollars out of the country, basically have complete water rights in these countries, control labor pool, they are rushing towards Africa for things that they could not get elsewhere. And that is what our reports reveal, and they should demonstrate that this is going to have very serious consequences for world's food supply, not to mention the serious devastation that such deals are causing for communities and families and farmers in Africa.
So I guess in a way, Anuradha Mittal, you could make the case that this is a sort of double whammy in a sense, because we know that speculators have been driving up the price of gasoline and food here in the United States and presumably abroad as well. And this has been the main problem why the recovery has slowed down. And this is what's hurting people most in the pocketbook. But on top of that, these same speculators are moving into Africa to make this killing on locking up the food supply of the future. And I guess the bottom line is their customers are not going to be in Africa, right?
Ian, that's a brilliant point you've just made. And I think that's, again, a unique thing that in our reports we have tried to put out. Because there has been talk about these speculators who have been profiteering through speculating on food prices, commodity prices, by speculating on oil prices. What we are also showing is that the same agents are now seeking control of land, water, resources on which this food is grown. But they're also going to control and dictate what is grown, how it is grown. So this is a kind of vertical integration of a food system that we have never seen before. So imagine your funds based in Portugal, in England, in the United States, in Dubai, controlling land in Africa, controlling what is grown on it, controlling the prices. And while they are kind of creating also this oil insecurity, by the way, energy insecurity, a lot of this very fertile agricultural land is being used to grow biofuels for exports to Western nations. And as you said, all this is to meet the needs of the West while Africa is once again being colonized, its resources being used in any way they want with no kind of environmental regulations and assessments on the impact on downstream user or upstream user, and they are free to go.
So I take it then, Anuradha Mittal, again, the Executive Director of the Oakland Institute, the author of this new report on the great African land grab, I take it that the new nation yet to be formed, it'll be happening in July, is Southern Sudan, is oil-rich, but the pipelines, of course, go through the north. That creates a problem for them. But my understanding is that there's an enormous amount of valuable agricultural land there, and that's where a lot of the investors are heading, right, Sudan?
Well, again, Ian, you said it. I mean, in this series of reports, we have released three very detailed country reports on Ethiopia, Mali, and Sierra Leone, but we've also released several briefs which look at specific land deals, and one of them is actually on South Sudan of a company out of Texas called Nile Trading and Development, which has several Texan connections, including to somebody who was appointed at U.S. Affairs.
So could you repeat that? I'm afraid, your phone dropped out. If you'd mind repeating what you just said.
Sure. I was saying that one of the briefs is about South Sudan. There's a deal that has been signed with a Nile Trading and Development Company, which is registered in Delaware. But we identified a lot of Texan connections in that deal. This deal is for 600,000 hectares of land with the ability to go up to 1 million hectares of land for only $27,000, basically. So it's a great deal which allows this company to clear the land and use any woods that are there. It allows the company to plant it with whatever they want, but it also allows the company to do mineral and oil exploration and gives them the right to sublease it to the third party. So basically, they're not just controlling the land, but also underneath what's there. It could be oil, mineral, whatever. And these kind of deals we are seeing in South Sudan, which involves such huge amounts of land, as I said, 1 million hectares of land for $27,000. And the communities don't even know about such deals. And very soon, this was the first phase of us releasing these investigative reports. But in the coming months, we will be releasing very detailed country reports, and South Sudan is one of them, where we document other such land deals, which also document U.S. involvement and point out what's so egregious about these deals.
So who are they making these deals with? Clearly, these deals are not benefiting the local people. Who do these foreign investors make their deals with?
Ian, it really varies in terms of who they're making the deal with. For instance, the deal that I just mentioned in South Sudan, that is made with representatives of the local district officers. In case of Sierra Leone report, we point out where Quefel, private holding out of Portugal, it has, basically negotiated directly with the community, and you fool the local community who do not understand much of these things. They see a foreigner and they think of it as a civil society organization who has come to end their poverty, and they have no memorandum of understanding with the government. So each deal is kind of unique, and that's what point we're trying to make, that there's such a lack of process and governance. If you look at, any extractive industry, thanks to the work that has been done by the civil society, they're all kind of procedures. But currently, when it comes to investment in land, the only direction has come from agencies such as the World Bank Group, which are advocating to these countries that become, friendly to foreign investors. That means get rid of your procedures, get rid of process. And in Africa, where because of colonial heritage, all traditional lands, all customary lands are considered, or communal lands are considered state lands. So it is very easy for a president or a president's advisor to get into a secret deal without providing all the information to the people whose lives are impacted and sell off the land. And people realize, which in my field work I realize, most times people realize that the land is gone when a bulldozer shows up.
So, Anuradha Mittal, yesterday in Zambia, in Lukasa, Lusaka, the capital of Zambia, the United States Secretary of State Hillary Clinton warned Africa of a creeping new colonialism from foreign investors and governments interested in only in extracting the continent's natural resources to enrich themselves and not the African people. Was she obliquely referring to what we're talking about?
Well, definitely she was, and it was very exciting for us to hear Secretary of State warn the African leaders to watch out, that there's a new phase of colonization that is starting in Africa, where these foreign investors are seeking and rushing to Africa in this sort of a gold rush. We could compare it to land rush can be compared to gold rush. And it was great. Unfortunately, she just talked about the Chinese who are rushing to Africa. As we point out in our research, and we look forward to, you know, informing U.S. administration better so they can educate their partners in Africa, that it is not just the Chinese or the Qataris or the Indians. Unfortunately, the Norwegians, the Swedish, as well as I said, private equity funds based in the Western world, they're all being driven to Africa, and they're promising their investors 25 to 40% returns. By the way, I might also mention that where our Secretary of State was speaking at AGOA conference, in the course of the research that we did involving private investors, we do know that some of these people who are colonizing Africa were sharing the platform with our Secretary of State, such as Susan Payne of Emergent Asset Management, Neil Crowder of Chaitin Africa. I mean, these are hedge funds whose goal in life is to profit and to, you know, reap benefits from poverty of Africa. I mean, just they talk about food security. We know, for instance, we have documentation that Chaitin Africa has an investment protection and promotion agreement with the government of Zambia, which allows it to export 80% of its produce outside the country. So while we talk about food security, this investor has gained this right from the government of Zambia that they can export most of the food, even if there are food shortages in Zambia.
Well, I'm afraid I'm sorry to interrupt you, Anuradha Mittal, but I regret to say we've run out of time. This is a fascinating subject. You've done us all a great service with this report. Can we revisit this conversation soon?
I sure do hope so, and in the meanwhile, I would urge the listeners to go check out this series of investigative reports. And as I said, all of this is done in secrecy, and we have released some of the documents that we collected in while doing this research, and we will be releasing more and more of these documents. So visit our website at oaklandinstitute.org or follow us on Facebook. Thank you.
Thank you again, Anuradha Mittal, who's the Executive Director of the Oakland Institute. And oaklandinstitute.org is her website. We're going to take a brief station break and we'll be back talking about the Dictator's Handbook.